Right now, we're very happy to welcome to our program Josh Rubner. He's a National Advocacy Director with the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. Thanks so much for being here with us tonight, Josh.
Thanks so much for having me on your show.
Josh, tell our listeners a bit about your organization, the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation.
Sure. The U.S. Campaign is a national coalition of more than 400 groups across the country working together to challenge current U.S. policy toward Israel and the Palestinians to support human rights, international law, and equality for all. Our coalition is made up of large national organizations like American Muslims for Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace, Peace Action, Progressive Democrats of America, as well as local grassroots groups throughout the country.
And just a little bit of interesting background that I wanted to check with you. You read things on the internet, you don't know what's true a lot of the time, but I had read that you're a dual citizen of Israel and the United States, and that part of the motivation for your work is you were injured slightly in a bombing in Israel and realized that peace and reconciliation was really the way to end the violence. Is any part of that true?
Both parts of that are true, yes. My father was born in what was then British Mandate era Palestine and grew up as an Israeli citizen. Even though I was born here in the United States, Israel's citizenship laws automatically go down one generation. So I automatically got it as a result of my father being born there. And yes, I was very slightly injured in a bombing in Jerusalem back in the 90s.
So part of your personal motivation is, apart from your own, suffering, maybe not so serious in comparison to some others, many others, through the decades, but you saw really the just solution of the conflict as the way to really approach ending the violence, I'm assuming.
Yeah, absolutely. It's clear that Israel's never going to get the security that it wants until it ends its apartheid policies towards the Palestinians. That's the only way towards a just and lasting peace.
Well, I wanted to turn our attention to assessing President Obama's recent trip to Israel and Palestine, the West Bank. There weren't a lot of high expectations for the trip. For most of the years of the Obama administration's first term, negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians have been frozen. Nothing's moved. All the while, Israel has expanded the number of settlements on Palestinian territory. So, expectations, again, were low. There was one, minor major breakthrough in terms of some kind of Israeli reconciliation with the Turkish government over the Israeli assault on a Turkish ship that was bringing aid and challenging the Israeli blockade of Gaza several years ago and resulted in the deaths of many people on board. But Josh, maybe you can give us your sort of overview of what President Obama accomplished on his trip. He was credited with making some good speeches, but maybe you can give us a little deeper analysis of what happened there.
Well, I'd like to be positive about the visit, but I think that it was actually very damaging in many respects. I think Obama signaled very clearly to Israel and to the Palestinian people that all he is offering is rhetoric, and that Palestinians living under Israeli military occupation, living under continued settlement expansion, living as refugees who are denied their right to return, or living as second-class citizens within Israel, are now painfully aware that this is no longer a policy prior for the Obama administration. And for President Obama to throw his hands up in the air and say, well, this is a very difficult problem, as he did with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in their press conference, I think is quite disingenuous. I think it obfuscates the role that the United States plays in maintaining Israel's apartheid policies towards the Palestinians. So President Obama didn't at all address the fact that it's unconditional U.S. diplomatic support and almost unconditional military support in the form of weapons that sustain and enable Israel to defy the rest of the international community and to perpetrate the types of human rights abuses that Palestinians suffer on a daily basis. So So to throw up his hands in the air and to say, well, you all deal with it, you all resolve it, make your leaders do it, is quite disingenuous. What the United States should do, if it's serious about trying to broker Israeli-Palestinian peace, is first and foremost to end the U.S. military support and the diplomatic support that enables Israel to continue these policies that even the United States opposes.
Now, Josh, when it comes to the Israeli settlements, would you say that's the biggest obstacle to sort of rejoining the peace negotiations over the last 4 to 5 years or longer?
It's definitely the number one issue that is holding back the prospects of renewed negotiations, for sure. Think back for a moment to 2010 in September when negotiations were reconvened.
Whoops, we have a phone problem here again tonight, and I apologize for that. It's not constant, but it's always propping up. I'm going to call Josh back. We'll continue the call in a moment. But stay tuned. We're going to be back with you in just a moment. So we'll be back in just a moment after some messages here, and we'll get Josh Rubner back on our just getting some PSAs here for you to listen to while we get Josh back on the line. Stay tuned.
There's no excuse for abuse. My name is Melanie Danilou, and I'm a staff person at the Women's Center of Greater Danbury. If you are a victim of domestic violence or know someone who is, we are here to help you. We offer free, confidential services to male and female, adult, teen, and child victims of all forms of domestic and dating violence. If you live in Upper Fairfield or Lower Litchfield County, call our 24/7 domestic violence hotline, 203-731-5206.
I'm Robin Lamott Sparks, Senior Director of Policy and Research for the Bridgeport Child Advocacy Coalition, or BCAC. At BCAC, we advocate for the well-being of the city's children, who unfortunately contend with far more hardships like poverty, violence, abuse, and poor health than their counterparts in the rest of Fairfield County. We employ a range of tools to fight for their future: research, community education, and mobilization. Though we've enjoyed many successes over the years, clearly, there's still much more work to be done. You can help. Join a BCAC task force, stay in touch with us through email or on Facebook, or make a tax-deductible donation right on our website at www.bcacct.org.
And we return now to our interview in progress. We briefly got cut off, but Josh, thanks for your patience, and you're back on the air. I think maybe you can just recap the last minute or so that we lost in terms of the major obstacles there in that's preventing peace negotiations and something more lasting to take place there.
Sure. Well, Israel's continuing to relentlessly colonize Palestinian land in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. That's making it more and more difficult not only to resume the prospects of negotiations taking place under propitious circumstances, but also really negating the opportunity for there to be a viable and independent Palestinian state that would arise from these territories, which are becoming more and more fragmented, more and more piecemeal by the day as Israel continues to take more and more Palestinian land through acts of ethnic cleansing.
Thank you for that. Now, just reintroduce you. We're speaking tonight with Josh Rubner, National Advocacy Director with the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation. There was a recent election in Israel, Josh, and Benjamin Netanyahu is now head of a new coalition government with some new parties in place, surprising many of the pollsters. But maybe you can talk to us about any more receptive. Do you think there'll be any more receptiveness in this new coalition government for opening up peace talks with the Palestinians and curtailing settlement activity in the West Bank?
No, not at all. It's very much a pro-settlement coalition that's in place. It's still Benjamin Netanyahu who heads the government. the new defense minister, Moshe Yaalon, was sued in U.S. court for war crimes and once called the Palestinians a cancer. So it's a very, very hawkish government. The only reason why the Western media has deemed this coalition government to be quote-unquote more moderate really has more to do with internal Israeli political dynamics than it does with peace efforts towards the Palestinians. The only change is that without ultra-Orthodox parties sitting in Israel's governing coalition, there might be a move to make sure that the exemption that ultra-Orthodox currently have that allows them to skip army service, that might get amended. But that has absolutely no bearing on the fact that Israel will continue its apartheid policies and colonization of Palestinian land under this government. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like Obama's willing to put any pressure on Israel in a second term to change that dynamic.
Do you think there's any concern in the Obama administration that the legacy of his administration may be tainted by the fact that they are not really aggressively looking to restart peace negotiations and exerting pressure on both Israel and the Palestinians to make some concessions and changes here to make the possibility of peace real?
Well, I would put it this way. I think that Obama certainly has a lot of egg on his face, because he made this a huge priority in his first term and abysmally failed due to an incredibly flawed strategy for trying to bring these parties back together to the negotiating table. I think very clearly the Obama administration is signaling that for the rest of its second term, it's hoping to keep this issue as much as possible on the back burner and hope against hope that things don't boil over and will need direct U.S. involvement, direct U.S. attention. I think Obama, this was his farewell tour of the Middle East, this recent trip. And I think it was a clear indication that he's not willing to put the kind of political capital behind this effort as he did in his first term.
For a number of years now, there's been a new strategy employed by many of the Palestinians, particularly in the West Bank, on attempting to gain world attention and solidarity and support from people around the world by really focusing on nonviolent approaches to resisting Israeli occupation. Maybe you can give us a little bit of your thoughts on the progress and advancement of that movement and its effect.
It's a hugely significant development, and I think it's having a huge impact in the United States, affecting the discourse, changing people's perception of who is the oppressor and who is the oppressed. In 2005, more than 170 different Palestinian civil society organizations came together and issued a historic call for global campaigns of boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel and corporations that are profiteering from Israeli military occupation and apartheid. And since that call from Palestinian civil society, this BDS movement, for short, boycott, divestment, and sanctions, has really mushroomed all across the world. Corporations such as Veolia, the French multinational that does a lot of transportation and water projects, for example, has literally lost billions of dollars worth of contracts, primarily in Europe, because of their involvement in profiteering from Israeli occupation and apartheid. So that kind of Palestinian civil society-led nonviolent leadership is having a huge, huge impact and is a huge dynamic. And of course, on the ground, you're also seeing weekly nonviolent protests in Palestinian villages that have been cut off from their lands by Israel's illegal wall in the West Bank, by expanding Israeli settlements, etc. And you can see that those efforts are really making waves with Five Broken Cameras nominated for the best documentary this year at the Academy Awards, which documents the struggle of this one West Bank village called Bilayin to protest Israeli aggression and apartheid policies toward this village. So, yeah, it's having a huge impact. It's changing minds, and it's very, very difficult for Israel to portray itself as the victim when they're acting so violently and so ruthlessly against Palestinian nonviolent protesters.
Josh Rubner, it seems as as the years go by, peace talks remain frozen and Israeli settlements expand on Palestinian territory, that Israel becomes ever more isolated in the world community. Does the fact that the United States remains steadfastly behind Israel and fairly much, at least publicly, non-critical of Israel's policies, does that insulate Israel from their growing isolation in the world?
To a large extent, it does. What I would say is that it prevents the international community from holding Israel accountable for its human rights abuses, its violations of international law, from implementing existing UN resolutions because of the undemocratic veto that we as a country have in the United Nations. So, for one example, in February of 2011, after negotiations had broken down, there was tabled in the Security Council a very mild resolution condemning Israeli settlements. Now, the Obama has condemned Israeli settlements on I don't know how many dozens of occasions, but here you have the Obama administration use its first and so far only veto at the UN to shield Israel from this mild condemnation in the Security Council. And there's been other examples where the U.S. has worked behind the scenes and overtly in the UN to kill the recommendations from different UN inquiries and recommendations for processes for holding Israel accountable for some of the war crimes that it's committed. So very much so, the United States diplomatic support of Israel is a key cornerstone that really enables Israel to get away with what it does.
We're speaking tonight here on Counterpoint with Josh Rubner. He's a national advocacy director with the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation, a coalition of hundreds of groups around the U.S. And, Josh, I wanted to ask you about some developments in terms of reconciliation between Hamas and Fatah, the two factions of the Palestinian political parties. What, if any, progress has been made there, and how important is reconciliation between Hamas and Fatah in terms of moving the peace process forward in any way?
There have been reconciliation talks between the two Palestinian political parties on and off for a number of years, and there have been a number of agreements reached on reconciliation. None of them have really been implemented to any great effect. So you do have a situation where you have a very bifurcated situation with the Palestinian Authority and Fatah, the PLO, running things in the West Bank, with Hamas running things in Gaza. But what's important to note here is that the United States has put up so many preconditions for reconciliation to take place that it makes it very, very difficult. The U.S. put all these preconditions on Hamas joining the political process, which makes it very difficult to accomplish. And that was a move that was sanctioned by the quartet, the so-called quartet, the U.S., the U.N., the EU, and Russia after Hamas took control in Gaza. So I don't think prospects for unification are on the horizon at this point. I mean, basically, you have a political situation where everything is just completely stuck, and nobody's buying this whole peace process game, and everyone's just kind of waiting out developments. And, you know, if Obama thinks that he can keep this on the back burner for another 3.5 years, I think he's mistaken. I think the situation is insufferable, and I don't think that it'll continue to be so quiet as Obama would hope.
Well, what events are you forecasting that could break this deadlock? Are we talking about an explosion of violence or maybe something more benign? What do you think is in the offing that could change the course of what we're witnessing for so many decades now?
Well, I think there's a lot of possibilities out there. I think on the sort of meta level, what we're at right now is at the end of an era, the end of a paradigm, which is the peace process paradigm. Look, Israelis and Palestinians have been at the negotiating table for 20 years as of September. September will be the 20-year anniversary of the signing of the Oslo Accords. it's clear to everyone that Israel has absolutely no interest and intent in allowing for the establishment of a truly viable, truly independent, truly sovereign Palestinian state. The game is up. Nobody's buying it anymore. And so we're waiting to see, I think, what comes in place of this two-state peace process paradigm. And I don't have the answer for it yet.
Okay. Well, no, that's a tough question to answer, but let's hope it comes soon and it comes without more violence. Josh, I wanted to ask you about the declaration of Palestinian statehood some months ago in the United Nations. Did that move the needle any in terms of world public opinion and help the Palestinian cause at all? I know the United States and some other countries penalized the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, the Fatah movement, for their declaration in the UN. But did it help?
I think it did. I think it helped because it showed just how isolated the United States and Israel are from the rest of the international community. I think there were only 6 countries that voted against Palestine becoming what's called a non-member observer state of the UN. So on the one hand, I think it helped because it showed just how isolated this position is becoming of trying to deny Palestinian freedom, deny Palestinian self-determination. On the other hand, it didn't change a thing on the ground, and no one expected that it would. But what is interesting about this new status of Palestine at the UN is that Palestine now has the possibility of joining the International Criminal Court. And that's something that scares Israel and its supporters in the United States incredibly, because the United States cannot stop the International Criminal Court from pursuing accountability should Palestinians choose to bring Israelis to trial for war crimes and potential crimes against humanity. So, Israeli military and political leaders are incredibly worried about being put in the dock, with the likes of people like Charles Taylor at the ICC, which would further erode the legitimacy of Israel, certainly.
And Josh, we only have a minute or two left, but I wanted to get your quick take on the U.S. media coverage of the long-standing conflict between Israel and Palestine. Many years ago, the coverage was blatantly one-sided. Things maybe have improved a bit, but what's your assessment of the regular diet of news that U.S. citizens get about the Middle East conflict as Israel and Palestine?
I think in general, if one can generalize about this, the day-to-day news coverage lacks the kind of historical context that would allow viewers and readers to make sense of the issue. But where things are improving, I think, is that the mainstream media is being more open to the voices of Palestinians and people who support Palestinian human rights in the op-ed pages, for example, on mainstream talk shows on television. So I think that the discourse in support of Palestinian human rights is growing in the United States, and that's definitely a positive thing because as more and more Americans hear from Palestinians themselves about the apartheid conditions under which they live, I think they'll become more sympathetic to the Palestinian cause for freedom, dignity, and equality.
Well, Josh, it's been great talking with you tonight. Thanks for sharing your insights. And maybe lastly, I can ask you to share the website with our listeners and how they can get in touch with you over at the Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation.
Sure. You can visit our website, which is www.endtheoccupation.org. And if you'd like to, you can follow me on Twitter at Josh Rubner.
At Josh Rubner and theoccupation.org, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much for spending time with us, Josh. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Josh Rubner, National Advocacy Director with the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation.